Navratri has officially ended, but for all the Indian communities living abroad, Navratri celebrations will probably go on for a couple of more weekends as Indian artists now start their tours outside India. This gives us NRIs a chance to groove to the dholi taros and the chogadas. I went for my Navratri just this past weekend and it was an interesting experience that left me with so many beautiful moments, some interesting stories and very profound realizations about the differences and the commonalities between life in India and Indian life abroad. So for today's episode, we're going to talk about Navratri and the spirit of Desi community events among NRIs. My name is Isha and this podcast is called Culture Chaos. Having spent all of my life as a proud Mumbai girl, my mind sort of went for a toss when I moved abroad, and since the past 8 years, I have been traveling from one country to another and have lost count of how many cities and houses I have moved. Culture chaos is what the state of my mind is. All my experiences of life away from home, trying to just make sense out of things. When I say Navratri celebrations in India, what do you picture? I see a huge elevated stage, a celebrity performer, extraordinary sound and music, a 15-member orchestra and an extravagance of colors, be it in the lighting or in the general ambience of the huge hall that we're dancing in. When talking about an Indian Navratri, I also see huge crowds of people, most of whom we can identify in the youth category. So we're talking loud and fast music, a whole bunch of young folk dancing, and just a real grand celebration of sorts. Now, let me build a picture of Navratri celebrations in Indian or NRI communities abroad. The first visual I see is people dressed in the traditional attires of saris and chanya cholis under huge winter coats, because Navratri here is also the time of the year when the winter has just begun. So you're in the parking lot and you see people from all age groups, from a 2-year-old baby looking cute as a button in traditional Gujarati clothes to grandpas and grandmas dressed in their best traditional outfits underneath their shawls and monkey caps, not really caring about what sort of a fashion statement their outfit is making. Now, mind you, most of the Navratri events in the West happen in soccer halls of school and community centers. So if you watch a video of Navratri happening in the West and wonder why it looks like a sports stadium, well, it actually probably is one. Because again, it's difficult to find venues like back home where there are hundreds of thousands of people attending these events every night for 9 nights of the Navratri. In the West, these events are held every weekend for over a month, and if one is in a larger city, then one can enjoy a Navratri show with live music, but a lot of times they might just play something recorded. So basically, that's really the scale and magnitude of the event that we're talking about that we can compare. Now, to be honest, in my 20 odd years of attending annual Navratri dances, I only associated Navratri with these festive fun elements. While I was in India, Navratri to me was about dressing up, looking good, letting my hair down and dancing away. The loud music, the grandeur and the huge crowds, when they were combined with really fast rhythmic dancing, they brought about an adrenaline rush like no other. That adrenaline brought much joy and explains why most of us kept on wanting to attend the Garba events year after year. While for some, the events were purely about dancing, for some, these events were great opportunities to socialize and meet new friends or even potential mates. So there was that aspect, and then of course there was the commercial aspect. when hundreds of thousands of people buy tickets worth a couple of $1,000 and gather in a public space. Such a gathering is one of the best commercial marketing opportunities for brands. So everywhere you go, you would see huge billboards and banners, and there would be some absurd prizes sponsored by the event partners and whatnot. So basically, Navratri events in India came with a huge social aspect. Now, since the scale of these events here is way smaller compared to India, the events here aren't so commercial. So when I started going to Navratri events in the US around 7 or 8 years ago, I was disappointed. I felt the dancing was too slow, the ambience was non-existent, and the music was just so subpar. For someone who was fresh off the boat from Mumbai Navratris, I felt as if the NRI community was stuck back in 1995 in the way it was organizing these events. But at the end of the day, beggars can't be choosers, so that's what it was for me. I was in a smaller town with a smaller Indian community, so if I wanted to go for Navratri, I just had to live with what options were available. Over the years, as I started attending more of these events, I realized what these events actually meant to the NRI community. While Navratri dance gatherings in India are a social event, here in the West, these events have set to make a bold cultural statement. I did some research and found out that some 30 odd years ago, Indian communities were actually banned from holding Navratri events in a few states in the US. Communities that were largely inhabited by Indians were the center of racist attacks, and imagining renting a public place to hold a gathering and associating the gathering to a religious event, these were all things that one didn't dare think of back in the day. There were court cases and public appeals involved, and it was only after all of these efforts that such a gathering of Indian community was even allowed. The Desis, as a community, were starting to make a cultural statement. Nowadays, these events are not so hard to organize here. The West is a lot more open to the idea of diversity and open to the idea of people indulging and celebrating their own cultural events. But it is still a cultural statement. It's a cultural statement to be able to go to a gathering where hundreds of people are boldly dressed in their traditional attire and probably speaking their traditional languages without being called out. It's a statement to be able to celebrate something that has a huge spiritual and religious significance. And more than a statement, it's an emotionally charged experience too. You see that when you meet grannies and grandpas at these events. People who've spent their whole adult lives in the West and who came here at a time when they were very obviously a visible minority and there weren't so many people like them from their home countries in the West. For people of that age group, they've spent their entire adult lives in a culture chaos trying to balance out both the worlds. For them, being able to join in on the dance while taking pride in their roots and their culture, that's what it's all about. These events, when celebrated in the West, become common meeting grounds for the entire community to come together and connect with each other. Here in this part of the world, these events aren't seen much as specifically Gujarati events, as they're seen as more of Indian community events where we see everyone participating. In a way, I believe it is becoming the same back home too as our cultures become more and more homogenized. This year during Navratri, I was lucky to witness some very special moments that made me want to share my experiences with you all. I witnessed an Indian father explaining the relevance of observing these 9 days to his 4-year-old daughter. While explaining the stories of Navratri and everything Navratri stood for, this father, I believe, was giving his daughter her first lesson on her culture, her first lesson on feminism and her first lesson on her roots. It was a special moment when that little girl folded her hands and twirled around in her little chaniya choli as soon as the music started. Another special moment was when a couple in their mid-70s came in and joined my little group and danced the three clap or tran tali na garba. Seeing the joy on their faces was worth every Navratri that I may have missed in the past 7 or 8 years of being away from home. It was in these moments that I experienced the true strength of owning our culture and the true power of holding on to one's roots. And with that comes an end to my today's episode. Stay tuned for my upcoming episodes where I share my stories about searching for comfort and navigating life away from home. This podcast is available on iTunes, Google Play, Saavn, Spotify, Castbox, or your preferred podcasting app. You can find more content for Culture Chaos on Twitter and Facebook. I would love to hear back from all of you, so feel free to write to me on my email. You can also leave your feedback in the form of a review on iTunes. Thank you for listening. This is Isha, and you're listening to Culture Chaos.